morning, everyone. My name is Andrew Harris, and I'm the Communications and Website Administrator for the Alberta Mentoring Partnership. I'm excited to host today's webinar with Mary Lee Block and share her presentation in just a few minutes. First, a quick couple housekeeping items. If you haven't already, please sign up for AMP's newsletter on albertamentors.ca. It's the best place to learn about upcoming events and future professional learning opportunities. I also invite you to check out our upcoming collaborative community network meetings for those of you connected with mentoring at your schools at albertamentor.ca/network. I'll be linking both of these in the chat box below. So let's talk about today's webinar. Healthy habits and healthy relationships are essential for all youth, especially those with more complex needs. How does your mentoring program engage in wraparound service supports, and how can you better work together with partners? The Forensic Adolescent Program is an Alberta Health Services program for youth who are involved in the legal system with a mental health diagnosis. A team of psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, nurses, and recreational therapists provide assessment and treatment with an aim to reduce risk in these populations. The FAP Recreation Therapy Services work with clients to decrease mental, emotional, cognitive, and social limitations. This impacts their ability to engage freely in leisure and maintain a healthy and balanced lifestyle. The service is delivered largely through formal mentoring programs, where trained and supportive volunteers from the community offer their companionship and skills in assisting youth clients to discover themselves and healthy recreational opportunities around them. Without further ado, I'll pass the mic over to Mary Lee Block and invite her to present.
Well, good morning, everyone. Thanks for attending today. This is the first time I've presented as a webinar panelist, so bear with me. I probably don't need to do the session, as the introduction really covered what I'm going to talk about. Basically, what I'd like to do in this next hour is just give you a little sense of what our program is about and how the mentorship piece fits our mandate. I am a recreation therapist and have been the only recreation therapist here for since its inception. We currently have a second one now because we are in need of that. And for the past 20 years, we have used volunteers, but the mentorship has been a work in progress and is now, I would say, in full swing, definitely still working out some kinks and improving it daily. But the AMP program has been a huge help to us and has definitely helped us to improve our service over the last 5 years that I would have been using their services. I just want to start by saying that without mentorship, we basically do not have a program. So moving into the session, I'm going to talk a little bit about how the gift of the mentor's time and how it makes such a difference in the kids that we're working with. So our program is an assessment and treatment program. We basically receive referrals from the Solicitor General and probation. We do assessments for the Solicitor General, which gives them information on which to base the conditions that they would put into a sentence for a young person. So those conditions then become their treatment options, and kids would come back here for treatment as well. So we're doing both of those pieces. These are basically our goals for today. The kids that are in our program must have both a mental health diagnosis and be involved with the legal system. The assessments that we provide are called Section 34s. As I said, they go back to the judge, and then those treatment recommendations would come back to us where we would provide that treatment. That comes through individual and family sessions, sexual-specific counseling, pharmacological intervention, and recreation therapy. We also provide consultancy to the community in different situations where we can give advice or assistance. So the clients that we serve are aged 12 to 18. In most cases, we do have some kids who are older just because they're still serving a sentence for a crime that they committed while within that age frame. The charges are usually for very serious criminal offenses. There are other programs in the city that deal with lesser offenses, and the, of course, mental health diagnosis piece. So here's an example of some of the types of offenses that we are dealing with. And here is an example of some of the examples of the types of diagnosis. And obviously, neither of those are exhaustive, those lists, but it gives you an idea of what the types of things we're dealing with. So our team consists of 22 employees. That's psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, nursing, and recreation therapy. We are currently at about 35 volunteer mentors, and we also have students within our program that are doing practicums, etc. So just to give you a framework of what we're trying to do here, recreation therapy, for those who aren't familiar, is the purposeful intervention using education and recreation participation to address physical, cognitive, emotional, and social barriers that limit the client from being able to enjoy their leisure time just the way that you and I would, and being able to make those kinds of decisions and have the skills that they need to be able to get the most out of those. What kinds of things are in their way? This is actually a list of the from the actual standardized testing that we use, the Leisure Diagnostic Battery, and standardized test that measures the perceived barriers of the client. And so these are the areas that we look at, and then these areas become our treatment goals, so that if whatever comes up as being the highest here is where we would focus our treatment. Obviously, finances, money is always a big issue for young people. But I would say the next thing that we deal the most with is the social and communication issues, and that's why we focused our treatment on that so much. And the mentorship is very, very helpful in both of those areas. So the model that we work under is basically this, whereby the client coming in is at the lower end of this grid. And we would call him a dependent leisure consumer. So they are really not aware of what leisure can do for them, how it can benefit them in their life, how it can help them to cope with their leisure or with their mental health issues. Also how it can help them to stay out of the legal system. So where we're working in different areas here as a therapist, as an educator, and as a advocate, we basically teach our mentors to do the work within these different areas and support them in that work as they go along. So they're basically non-degreed rec therapists by the end of the training, and we're supporting them in their work, in the activity work that they do with them. So our overall mandate, obviously, within our clinic here at the Forensic Adolescent Program is to reduce recidivism, to keep kids out of jail. We're going to do that. We're also trying individually to reduce the barriers to those kids to accessing healthy and fulfilling leisure opportunities, that they're filling their lifetime or they're filling their free time with things that are meaningful to them. We're going to try and teach them and educate them so that they know how to do that. They know what they like. They know how to get to those things. They know how to pay for them. They know how to register. They know what skills they need. They have the skills they need. We're going to teach them those things. We want them to be able to link the good feelings and benefits that they can receive from those things to the actual activity that they're doing, and give them that power to be able to access those things independently without the help of social services, where they know they can get a good feeling, a positive outlook through their own doing. We're going to support the exploration of new things for them, new abilities, and because as a young person, you may not know or have been exposed to the things that you may love. And this is all done through the mentorship and the supportive mentorship in succeeding on those above goals. With adolescents, obviously, the way we look is super important. And if you have to do these things by yourself or with a clinician, it's just not the same. So having a community member who is close to their age and who is aware of what the goals are and able to redirect and guide the young person is key in the success of all of achievement of goals. So our mentors help their clients to achieve, help our clients to achieve their goals using rec therapy as their vehicle. What kind of roles do they have? So you can see here that this is a slide that I've taken out of one of our training video or our training sessions, but basically I want to draw your attention to two things here. I just need to get this out of the way. So the listener who is there when everyone else wants to advise, our kids deal with a lot of meetings, authoritative figures, punitive kinds of measures. So somebody who's willing to listen and be non-judgmental is extremely different for them. The friend who's going to allow them to be themselves and have fun without conditions. And then all of these other things, companion, role model, facilitator, cheerleader, and coach fall into that mentorship piece. So we deliver our program in a few different ways. We have a structured weekly program called Rec Check. We have a community Rec Check, which basically the kids do not attend a program, but they meet their mentors in the community. We have a Rec and Roll, previously known as Skills and Thrills program, which is a educational skill building program that's attached to recreation. It's very specific in its what it's delivering and the skills that it's working on. I'm going to go into that a little bit more. And then we have the ERCS program, where we provide recreational services. And again, I'll talk about that a little bit more. RecCheck is a weekly mentored program where the mentors meet their kids on Tuesday evenings in two different locations in the city, the south and the north. It's an hour and a half meeting, and basically the kids direct what happens during that time. There may be a 15-minute group activity because there are some benefits to having the kids in groups and practicing their skills in the groups, but the majority of the time is spent individually with their mentor, with the kids choosing what activities they want to do during that time. Evening ends with a debrief with the mentors only, and that's basically discussing problems, working out how things went, talking about how things went, cheering on successes, dealing with challenges, and providing brainstorming sessions where we can give the new strategies or new ideas for problems they may be facing. The community rec check, I think, could best be understood if you thought about it as the big brother, big sister thing. The client, the mentor, and the mentee are basically deciding when they meet during the week. They're usually in this program because they don't fit the rec check program. Maybe the mentor isn't available on Tuesday nights. Kids are working. It's sometimes difficult to fit them into that structured program, or they just don't fit it. So this allows us the opportunity to offer those kids something. And they basically meet under the supervision of the rec therapist, but not with the physical presence of the rec therapist. So that mentor is still receiving support through a weekly or monthly meeting. To make sure that they're on track and that they're still working towards the goals of that individual. It's probably important to say at this time, not just because of the nature of our clients, but for the safety of everyone's concerned, we do not allow our mentors and mentees to ever be alone in any situation. So they're always in a public place. The mentors are not transporting in their vehicles. If they're transporting, they're on a bus or in a cab or what together, but in always in a public place. And that's, as I say, to protect everybody. The rec therapist is always aware of where they're at, and we are paying for those exploration activities, and also making sure that they fit our mandate. The Rec and Roll program is basically a it's been many things over the years. We have offered this program for probably about 15 years. It's a 15-week mentored skill building and recreation exploration experience. So the thing that makes this different is the fact that the mentors themselves basically act as equals to the mentees or the clients that are in the program. And this allows for so many positive outcomes. The young person is there with their person who they trust. So first of all, they don't have to go by themselves and alone at the first day. There's that is taken away. They are able to misunderstand something and clarify it through their mentor who is sitting through the same classroom session, asking questions just as any student would be, doing the same work activities, participating in role plays, but also really role modeling what a student looks like. How does a student actually learn from a situation like this? The follow-up benefit is that half of the session is in classroom time and half is in recreation time. So when the classroom time is finished, the mentor and mentee have an opportunity to be together in a recreation setting, which provides all kinds of opportunities to practice these skills. So we normally have about eight mentees and eight mentors in each session. It's an hour and a quarter in the interactive classroom setting, and then an hour and a quarter in recreation. We do hold it in the leisure, one of the leisure centers here in Calgary. The curriculum focuses on cognitive behavior and social skills training. So this really addresses the barriers that I highlighted earlier as being, strong needs within our population. The cognitive behavior piece focuses a lot on changing negative thinking and giving them the power to have a say in how they feel and some tools to how they might be able to independently deal with some of those negative attitudes and actions that they are having. And then the social skills training gives them some really hands-on social skills practice for navigating their employments, their relationships, their schools, situations. And it's actually very real to the kids. They are skills that they want to know. And of course, a part of that is just helping them to see how those skills are going to help them in future. So as I said, the mentors act as students alongside the mentee in completing program tasks and supporting each other along the way. Our graduation, we make a big deal about it. We have family come. We usually have a drum circle, and it's a really positive time for the kids, especially when they they're not usually in the limelight for good things that they've done. So this can highlight some of their strengths. I guess it's true to say that their specialized training required for this particular program. The ERCS program, I'm not going to get into too much. It's basically a specific sentence that a young person can get if they have a very serious crime. It's usually it's a it's a very serious crime that they, in order to be offered this program, and it basically allows them to have, serve part of their sentence in the community with the support of a huge team of people that are working with them as they navigate being out of jail. And the recreation therapist, or the recreation piece of this, is that we will insert a mentor into this program and in with the young person, and it's usually a really effective help for this young person as they navigate socially some of the new things that may have occurred in their community since they have been incarcerated. A lot of times kids aren't allowed to associate with any of their previous friends, so without friends it's kind of hard to go out and find fun things for yourself to do. So our mentors fill that piece there. So what I'd like to talk about now is a little bit of some of the challenges that we have faced during our developing our mentorship program and how we have dealt with them. I'd also be some of the problems that I'm going to present, I don't have answers for. And if nothing else, the audience can feel that they're not alone if they have the same problems. But also, if you do happen to have a solution for them, I'd be very interested in hearing what you have to say. So every program has challenges, and here's how we have addressed some of ours. So when it comes to recruitment, if any of you were at the recent symposium, we had quite a long discussion on how it's quite a common challenge to find male volunteers. And I would say from the outcome of the discussion that we had at the symposium, what we concluded was, is there really a difference? Is that a negative thing that we don't have enough male volunteers? And I think I agree with that for the most part. With our clients, however, there are some circumstances that do make it a lot easier for us to provide our service if the mentor is a male, particularly with some of our young people who have sexual offenses. There are some added supervision restrictions in them accessing community facilities, and if the mentor is able to be with them, for example, in locker rooms and such, that can be helpful to us. The other piece that I would add to that is that a large portion of our clients have mostly females in their lives. Their social workers and their probation officers are female. Their caregivers are often female. So it does provide a difference when it comes to role modeling and giving a more positive example of what socially how a male can present and be more positive in their communicative relationship things. So I do think that there's a reason. Anyway, the way that we have dealt with that is basically we've had the best success through advertising through our own current mentors. When I am running a new session, I definitely send an email or a text to all of our current volunteers saying, I am in need of male volunteers. Please, if you know anyone, direct them my way. You apparently cannot advertise on Propelis, which is previously known as Volunteer Calgary. So you need to be careful in how you advertise for that. It has helped us to target that, just to let them know that that is a vacancy that we have. We also use our own individual networks through the staff in our program. We usually go through them to say, do you have students? Do you know people who might be, many of our staff are teaching as well. So if they have students in their classes that they think they could target and ask, that really helps too. And just specifically asking certain people in your own network, if you know someone who you think might fit that role, and you ask them. Sometimes people respond very well to being approached when you think they have a skill, when you think that they have a skill to share. I'd be interested in anything that you might have to add to any of these areas that I'm going to speak about. So when it comes to screening, one challenge that I learned the hard way was when an applicant comes to you and is not appropriate to be a volunteer in your program for many different reasons. And it's very hard to hear that you are not able to secure a volunteer position as the applicant. Some people read that, take that news very negatively. So my volunteers are as important to me. The support of them is as important to me as the support of my clients. I'm expecting a lot of them, and I feel that being honest with them right from the beginning is important. I also have a obligation to put people into these positions that can handle the position. So, and it's not always an easy one. So, one of the ways I have dealt with that is to, where appropriate, even if I cannot offer the person a position, I can offer them training. And I believe that the training that we offer is beneficial for any community member to understand our client better and to learn how to support anyone in their own communities and their own networks. So I really believe that by offering training, I'm offering something valid to them and validating them and their personal situations. I'm also pretty clear on why I have to turn them away, that oftentimes it's because I feel that putting them with a young person in our program may be detrimental to them, that they are just not at a stage where they can take on what I'm asking them to do, and that possibly in future when they become more stabilized or more secure in their own areas, that we could reconsider them. I do find that many times people who want to volunteer with us have been through different situations in their own lives and find it that they want to give back because they've been through this and because they feel they've come through it. And those experiences can be very, very valid when it comes to understanding and empathizing with the clients that we have. So those are great skills. It's just important that you're at a stage where you've mastered that yourself and you're confident and you're in a position where you can handle learning about others' trauma. So training, this continues to be a problem for me in that we have 4 sessions of 3 hours each, plus some online obligations and resources that are available to our trainees, our volunteer candidates. They also have to have a police clearance and a child intervention check. So there's quite a lot of screening of them before they get to the training piece. But because it's a progressive model and we address 3 different things in our training, we address the recreation therapy piece, so helping them to understand about what recreation therapy is. We have a session on mentorship. We have a session on dealing or understanding the forensic client, so learning about some of the mental disorders themselves, the medication, the treatment of those of the same. And then lastly, we do a session on trauma-informed care, so how to be a supporter for a person who has been traumatized or experienced trauma. So it is progressive. They do need to have the information in order before I'm prepared to put them with a client. And reality has it that always one or two people cannot make it to all sessions, which means I need to basically redo the full session individually. So I would love to be able to find a way of doing that. I've tried videotaping it, but it is pretty interactive. And so, if anyone has any ideas on that, I'd be thrilled to hear back from you on it. Secondly, when it comes to training, providing training that's meaningful and retained by trainees. So, this is a place where I have gained much information from the AMP. I have learned so much from what they have had to offer and have changed things, if evaluated them and tried again. There always seems to be new things to try. They have amazing resources that you can insert without spending hours developing something. So I'm a big fan of that program and how it has been helpful to us. I am a half-time person and I have a caseload of at least 20 kids, so as well as my caseload of 35 volunteers. So I really do appreciate anything that is already done and quick and dirty learnings that I can use to improve the program that we offer. So that has been really helpful in creating meaningful training that's up to date with our client, with our volunteers. One thing that I have tried recently is spreading the training out over a longer period of time. I used to do like 4 Mondays in a row, and what I found was it was overload. There's a lot of new information for our volunteers, and at the end of training, sometimes they don't get placed for 6 to 8 months, and so that information, unless they go back and review everything, is sometimes lost. So we've done a couple of things. We've spread the training out. We've inserted a field trip, so the volunteers actually go and see what the program, spend an evening at the program during their training time. And we have not done this yet, but have considered actually starting a volunteer with a client prior to the completion of their training. And the value in this is that they all of a sudden realize, oh, now I see why this is important. Now I see where I'll be able to use this information and these tools. We've started by the with the field trip, and there's some other things that are complicating actually starting a volunteer before they're finished training. So I'm not quite there yet, but we have found that just in including the field trip has made a difference in that area. We definitely, again, through the advice of AMP, offer ongoing training. This is a little harder. Our volunteers are busy, but there's so many things that you can't cover in the training. And again, as they become mentors, they realize, oh, hey, I could really use a session on problem solving or boundary setting or trauma-informed care, all of those kinds of things. I wish there was more time because I'd love to offer something weekly. We also use a digital form of resource access for mentors so that all the information that they have been given, the tools they've been given, is accessible to them throughout their mentorship. Mentor support, it's challenging to provide the mentor with individual support that's required to address the individual client needs. So we do provide support in our group sessions, but that's pretty generic. Sometimes we'll deal with an individual problem, but we only have a half an hour at the end of our programs. Mentors definitely learn from others' experiences, so that group piece is really helpful. And it's also helpful for them to feel good about themselves. If they do happen to have something that the mentor has something to offer, it kind of helps to highlight, hey, I know that. I've learned that here. I've progressed here. I have something more to offer than I thought. So there's benefits from both sides of that that group sharing and that group support. In addition, we try to schedule individual monthly meetings with our mentors, especially those that are doing the program that's outside of our structured
We hope
programs.
you enjoyed today's episode. If
This
there's
is
a
helpful just
program
to
that you're
highlight
aware of, or
successes
if there's
that
a
they've
mentoring
made and
leader in your
remind
community
them
that
that
you would
baby
like us to
steps are really
profile on the
important
Mentoring
with
Minute
this
podcast,
population. If you
please send
just
us
leave
an
your
email at
mentors without that constant
mentor.support@albertamentors.ca.
reassurance,
Have a
they
great
can
week.
feel very disenchanted. They can feel that they're not making a difference. It's easy to feel that way, especially with a difficult population. And so I find that that little 5-minute phone call or even a coffee, if it's a more a bigger issue, is really worth that effort because you're rejuvenating and energizing that volunteer and reminding them what the importance of their work is, how much of a difference they're making, just encouraging them because it can be very defeating, and especially if they're on their own. It also creates that independent piece for them, like, okay, I can do it. I can go back out there again and do this again. And I've got some new information and some new strategies that I can use. In the case of some of our kids, it's helpful to actually invite the mentor to attend the case conferences so that the rest of the team can see the work that they're doing. It can be highlighted there, but also that they have some things to offer at a case conference that may not come from any other team member. If you're seeing a kid in your office all the time, and someone is seeing them out in their real life and with the in the community, and they are able to offer information about the way that young person navigates his life in a more real-time kind of a situation. So very, very helpful. I tried that out once as a necessity, and mother is a necessity is definitely the mother of invention because we kind of implemented that on a regular basis in our IRCS program for sure. One of my biggest challenges is just finding time to effectively manage, especially those administrative duties. They are at the bottom of the pile and yet so, so important in different processes. So, I recently recruited a volunteer administrator who was going to be wonderful. Unfortunately, she got a job. So, my other piece that I should add to this is that maybe look for someone in a retired position, in a retired situation that isn't looking for a job, because otherwise you're going to spend a lot of time training them and then lose them. So I'm actually in the process of looking for a volunteer administrator. I also think that if there's staff changes, that person can be really helpful in if they're staying, that just that knowledge that they have. We use a volunteer management website, and it's fairly complicated. So somebody who knows that and can carry that on with a new staff member would be amazing. They also would know volunteer intricacies that a new person would take a long time to learn. So I do think that having a volunteer in that position would is going to be and was very helpful. Recognition. Sometimes we definitely have difficulty finding monetary resources to adequately recognize our mentors. I think in dealing with this issue, I spent a lot of soul searching time because our volunteers, as I said earlier, are our program. Without them, we have nothing. In order for them to be the best they can, they need to know what you think of them. I have learned that often they're not looking for Tim's cards or for certificates, but they're looking for, you did a great job of this. I have some information that's going to help you to be even better. I can support you. I'd like to support you in learning. I expect a lot of them. I give them a lot of stuff to do, and they create a lot of skills out of their work with us. We've had many of our volunteers have chosen to change their career path due to their experience in working as a volunteer in our program. So I think in looking at what are they actually looking for, and maybe talking a bit about that in your interview so you're aware of what their needs are, and trying to meet that need through other ways other than monetary kind of thank you gifts. We do a lot, we take a lot of time at Christmas and on anniversaries to write notes to our volunteers and to meet with them personally, just to document what the progress we've seen in their youth and in themselves with their own talents and skills, and highlight the things that they have done for the youth in our program. We never hear enough good things about ourselves, and I found that that has been, I think, something that people have appreciated from our program, that personal recommendation or that personal acknowledgement. Sometimes getting the young person themselves to write a note of thank you to the mentor is not only good for the mentor, but it's an exercise in social skills for the young person to acknowledge someone else, to express appreciation, to articulate those thoughts, their thoughts and feelings on paper. This has been a really important one for not only our mentors, but the kids, our clients, and a good skill to have for future. We also offer opportunities to both our clients and our mentors to participate in training of new mentors. This is, again, something that I think volunteers really appreciate. It's a good way of acknowledging the skills that they have and how much you appreciate what they know, sharing their experience about the program with new candidates, new volunteers is invaluable, because they more often than not address things that you don't as a trainer, more of those anecdotal types of things that the new volunteers have concerns or worries about. By offering our clients to come into training, I can't tell you the benefits that come out of that. Getting to be the expert that's being asked questions about positive things rather than asked negative questions. Our kids can barely get themselves out the door because they're so inflated and feeling so good about themselves when they leave a training session. The volunteers have so many questions of them about their experience, and obviously we don't talk about any personal charges or any personal mental disorders, but the kids are basically presenting on what's the program's meant to them, what their mentorship has meant to them, and how it's been beneficial in their lives. And it's, I can't tell you how, it's always the favorite part of our training as well for the candidates that are in it. Obviously, we provide references, and we also use our volunteer administrator to kind of seek out, there's still some times when we need those guest speaker gifts, etc. And it's nice if we get some help with our volunteer administrator in seeking those out. Lastly, evaluation. It's difficult finding effective tools for meaningful evaluation of the mentee client outcomes. We do use standardized tests in our program. These are recreation therapy tests, but we also use some psychological tests. So we use the Leisure Diagnostic Battery for pre and post testing of our clients for the recreation piece. Also, the BEC addresses different things about how the kids feel about their anxiety, depression, self-esteem, and because we're directly addressing those things in our treatment, we want to know how it's changed for them. So those are two tests that we're using. If people want to know more about those later, I'm happy to talk to you about them in more detail. And it's also good for funders if you've got some standardized outcomes. Finding effective tools for meaningful evaluation of volunteer outcomes. We basically ask our volunteers, and we get feedback on all of our training sessions. We also administer a yearly survey of program questions, mentor questions, and the wording of these questions and what you include in these feedback, in these evaluations, is really important and can be catered, like you can craft it to meet your own needs. And there are some really great AMP tools for this as well. Still working on this challenge, finding effective tools for the meaningful evaluation of the mentorship itself. And I think that there are some resources that we can use on that. It's just in the too hard basket right now. We do use substitutes in our programs. I don't know if people have difficulty with that as a challenge. We did find it a challenge to begin with. We have found that using substitutes or fill-ins has been a had nothing but positive outcomes. It increases the youth's network. It builds new skills for them in getting to know new people. And it also makes them feel supported. We don't just cancel them coming because their mentor can't make it. Oops, oops, sorry. Something that came up in the latest symposium was assuring that a youth you have a youth voice in mentorship. So we used to just debrief the mentor about the youth that they were getting. We also now speak to the youth about the mentor that they're getting prior to the mentorship. We provide structured opportunities for the mentor to express his or her thoughts to both to the program and to the mentor, giving them a voice. And we, as I mentioned earlier, invite the youth to be guest speakers at our volunteer training. That concludes what I want to share with you at this point. Thank you for listening, and I guess I'll hand it back to Andrew at this point.
Hi, thank you. That was fantastic. Is there any questions from the audience if you want to type those into the chat box? I did get a couple email questions, if that's okay to ask.
Sure.
So the first one that usually always comes up is background checks for volunteers.
Yes. So because our volunteers are under the Alberta Health Services Volunteer Resources, as soon as they are accepted, they are connected with AHS Volunteer Resources, who have a myriad of required things from the mentor. And one of those, of course, is a police background check. They also have to do a AHS orientation seminar, and but background checks are part of that. I also, in addition, require a child intervention check.
Perfect. Think that concludes this webinar today. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll be posting this on our website shortly.
Okay, thanks very much.
You so much. Have a nice day.